I'm very happy now to welcome Carl Robigo. He's former president of Austin Energy, which is a municipal utility. He's a nationally recognized electric utility expert, and he will be leading a public education forum tomorrow, Wednesday, the 18th of September, called Should We Own the Power Company? It's at 5:30 at the Scottish Rite Temple at 463 Paseo de Peralta here in Santa Fe, sponsored by New Energy Economy, the Sierra Club Rio Grande chapter, and the League of Women Voters. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much for having me.
So let's talk for a moment about how we get our energy. I mean, you plug in the toaster and you make toast, you pay your bill, but you don't necessarily think about all the different choices that are out there about where your energy comes from. Some cities have basically citizen-owned public utilities. Some of them pay their bills to private companies. What's going on? How does this all work in different places in the United States?
Yes, you're right. We get our electricity from a lot of different ways. Somewhere in a room, there are millions of greatly inconvenienced gerbils running in little wheels. I think everybody kind of knows the basics, right? Which is that the mostly in this country, we get our electricity by burning stuff, right? We burn coal, we burn natural gas. We're starting to learn that we can do it from the sun and from wind. We have some old history of doing it from hydropower, running water. So everybody knows how it's made. And I think people, because they've seen power lines on the road, they know that it must go from a power plant over a power line. The general model is it starts out on big wires and comes to smaller and smaller wires till it finally gets to our house. So the real question is, what's the business that's organized around that? When Thomas Edison first came up with the idea of having generators in places like New York City, where they had an early demand for electricity because that, in those days, the resource that was lighting the cities was oil, and it was making, and in some cases, coal for heat. It was making cities an unbearable place to be. So electricity offered an opportunity to clean up the way we got our energy. But not everybody could afford to buy an Edison generator and set up their own power system like some of the big companies were doing. So across this country, communities got together. Communities got together to do what they couldn't do alone, which is to form power companies, to invest in those power plants, generators in those days, to take the electricity and build wires to distribute it to customer use. And for much of the country, that was done in our cities, and it was done with municipal electric utility, publicly owned government entities, just like the same entities that got together to provide us with clean water and sewage service and eventually in garbage service and all those things, right? People getting together to do together what they couldn't do alone. Then around the 1920s, there came another kind of innovation, which was a fellow in Chicago came up with the idea that you could make a lot of money doing this. And so just like we've had in recent time, these eras of deregulation, this man, Samuel Insull, had the idea of privatizing these power systems. And he offered deals with the government to say that if you would give, in those days, Consolidated Edison, an exclusive franchise, the exclusive opportunity to serve customers and have no competition, have a monopoly, then that they would promise to provide electricity to anybody that wanted it. And that quickly became the dominant way that people got their electricity, from Consolidated Edison, Con Ed, or ComEd. And that leads us down to places like New Mexico, where you have Public Service Company of New Mexico. Originally a public service, but a private corporation with stockholders in New York City or wherever they are, who expect a profit to be made from the fact that this company has a monopoly to provide us with something that's pretty much essential to the way we live. Now, some of those original municipal companies held on. The place where I just worked before I became a consultant about a little over a year ago was Austin Energy, a municipal electric utility owned by the people of Austin. Austin, Texas, run as a city department. The board was the city council. So the people could vote for the board, and all of the dividends, all of the money that was collected was plowed back into our local economy. was part of our local economic engine. They're the biggest one, a municipal utility, is the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power, still provides those services to the people of L.A. There are big versions like the power authorities, the Bonneville Power Authority, the Tennessee River Valley Authority. There are little ones, little co-ops and municipal utilities in small cities across the country, about 1,000 of them actually, where people are still in control of getting their electricity. So that's the history lesson. Now, why are we talking about it? We're talking about it because we want to start a conversation. In fact, we want to drive a conversation. Conversation's already been started to bring the concept of local control to electricity here in Santa Fe. It's the perfect community for it. It's a highly engaged community with a strong interest in doing something together that they can't do alone. And the thing that they can't do alone right now is to start acting proactively about making power in a responsible way and channeling the profits that are associated with making and serving, selling electricity back into the community.
Now, hang on a second. Are you talking about what's the difference? The opposite of privatizing would be let's call it publicizing.
Yeah, right. We actually say municipalizing, which is even worse. Yes.
The existing power company, PNM, or are you talking about making a new power company, which is an alternative to the private power company?
More the latter than the former. But the way, the general arc was sort of what's in store if you want to municipalize your utility is that you have to have a discussion with the utility who's already put up all the poles and the wires. And you figure out some way to buy them, take them over, some financial transaction.
That they have to want to.
Well, they can want to. In some cases, they can actually go all the way to a condemnation proceeding. It's something they call eminent domain. The government can take over. The city government could take, or the county government could take over those things, have a court proceeding, and reach a fair price. Because remember, the idea, remember where I started. The idea of providing electric service to the citizens is a public service issue. Utilities like PNM and these other privately owned, they're called investor-owned utilities, the ones with the shareholders in New York, they operate under a franchise. They have a license to operate. They don't own that right. They have a license, and they have it. It's legal, and it's a contract, and it's binding, and they've made investments in trust on it. So a lot of legal issues to be worked out on that. But if the city or the county wanted to move forward, they could move forward over their objections. The one thing the Constitution provides is that if you did that, you have to pay them fair compensation. That's the takings clause of the Constitution. So we're not talking about doing anything outside the law.
Right.
But the preferred path, the path that other cities are taking, is to try to negotiate. The desire is that you would settle once the public decided that that's what they wanted to do.
So why should the public decide that that's what they want to do? What's in it for the public?
To do the thing that they can't do alone. So the major source of our contribution to air pollution, which gives rise to rising asthma and makes our air unbreathable, to climate pollution, to the burning of coal, to all of those issues, the main impediment to being more efficient and using more renewable energy and to taking advantage of improvements in technology and science. The main obstacle to all of that is the fact that an investor-owned utility has sunk millions of dollars, in some cases billions of dollars, into doing it the old way. And so what they tend to say is, I have a coal plant, and I like coal plants. I make a lot of money off of coal plants, and I don't want to stop doing that. And you as an individual citizen can write a letter to the utility and say, I wish, and they don't have to listen to you. Your relationship with your utility, with an investor-owned utility, and this work, don't get me wrong, a lot of good is done by these utilities, and I'm not bashing them, but your relationship is intermediated. To actually get to the utility, you have to understand that an investor-owned utility is regulated by a state commission here in New Mexico. It's the PRC. They're elected officials. That's the people you have to talk to in order to exercise some control or try to have some control or get your way or get a service from the utility. And that utility has got dual allegiances. They've got allegiances to the shareholders in New York because they promised they'd make them a profit. They sold them bonds and promised they'd repay their debt. So they're their allegiance financially is to a bunch of people that you've maybe never even met and never will. And their allegiance regulatorily, we're coming up with all the big words today. From a regulatory perspective, their allegiance is to those commissioners. And I know how that worked because I was a public utility commissioner in the state of Texas. I regulated utilities when I was there back in the mid-1990s. And that is the customer for the utility. And those elected officials stand in the way of what you want, or they enable what you want, but right. They're doing it on behalf of the whole state.
So when you have a municipal utility, is there a track record of municipal utilities providing, for example, more renewable energy, less climate change, less pollution kinds of gases, things like that?
The municipal sector, the public power sector, has got a track record of a couple of things. First of all, they traditionally have lower rates because they don't have to feed the profit engine of the investor-owned utility. So on average, the price of electricity from municipal entities is lower.
So the difference between what they pay and what we pay is what we're paying to make shareholders
essentially
make money.
Right,
essentially.
Right. Plus all the lawyers and the regulatory people and all the things that go along with that. Plus in some cases, and we don't have to get into the too super deep stuff here, but there's actually a strong incentive built into regulation for utilities to build big power plants. We actually designed it in back in the 20s. Because we wanted them to build power plants to provide electricity for all of America.
Which seemed like a very good idea
right.
at the time.
And now we're learning better. Now we know that smaller power plants and local distributed energy, like rooftop solar and combined heat and power, natural gas, super efficient power plants and things like that, are much more efficient, more environmentally friendly, but they don't make as much money for the investor-owned utility.
Right.
The municipal formula changes that. Because the money comes back, the shareholder and the customer are exactly the same people. And the city council members, or whoever it is that they're act to oversee that utility, are motivated to keep costs down. That's how municipal utilities work. So that's one. Second of all, because they haven't had these multi-billion dollar investments in nuclear power plants, for example, which take decades to pay off, you know, they have freedom to move. They are... The citizens have the ear of their municipal utilities because the people that run those utilities are often hired by the elected officials. So if you want to have some influence, it's like you can walk straight into the board of directors for a municipal utility. You can't do that with an investor-owned utility with those New York shareholders. So what you'll see is that municipal utilities are offering more creative services. They're increasing their renewable energy share faster.
What do you mean by creative services?
Things like flexibility on bill payment programs or specially tailored programs for low-income customers or green power initiatives. The one you mentioned, Austin Energy, over 10 years ago, before I was at the utility, they created... In fact, it's now closer to 15 years ago, they created a voluntary green power program that has led the nation for almost a decade continuously in sales and provided a 100% green power option to business customers as well as residential customers in the community at lower prices. So that kind of innovation can be adopted because people can go into the council and say, that's the kind of innovation we want. And it's... We say it's the difference between direct and indirect control.
One of the problems in both the public and the private sector is competence. And so there's a lot of competence and there's a lot of incompetence in running various bureaucracies, whatever they are. And how can you ensure in a public utility that it will be well run?
It takes oversight. Every large organization needs oversight in order to make sure that it runs efficiently, that it doesn't run afoul of the law or just good manners, right? So whether it's an investor-owned utility or a municipal utility or a cooperative with its local board, somebody's got to be minding the store, checking in, setting the standards for performance. The advantage that municipal power offers is that you can do that yourself. You can come in to speak to the council. For example, when I was in Austin, If somebody wanted to propose, say, reducing the solar budget, I had about a $20 million a year budget for solar that I was putting on municipal buildings, plus about another $5 million for solar that was people were putting on their rooftops of their businesses and homes. If somebody wanted to come in and say, cut the solar budget, or say a program manager, say I, instead of being a solar promoter, I was a solar curmudgeon, and I tried to cut the budget for it. I can tell you that in my community of Austin, the solar community, that the 600 or so people who are working in the solar industry would have been down there in city council so fast it'd make your head spin.
Right.
And that, so it...
Whereas you if know, you go to a shareholder meeting,
exactly.
They just ignore you.
You file a resolution.
If you even hold a share.
Right. You have to buy a ticket to get into the meeting,
yeah.
Right? And then you have to follow through those rules and all. And who knows where that shareholder meeting is going to be. Now, don't get me wrong. I mean... There is a state regulatory commission, and you have legal rights to express your opinions, but it's very diluted, direct versus indirect control. So I don't want to kid anybody. Municipalization requires engagement. It requires active, involved citizens to make it work very well. It pays huge dividends if you do. I'm not saying that everybody has to be an active, involved citizen. They have to invest 10, 5, even 1 hour a week to be a good citizen regarding their municipal utility. But all organizations require oversight. The good news here is that the local community, if you take a municipal approach, the local community can do more faster.
So what would be the relationship between rooftop solar and the municipal utility? Like right now, if you get rooftop solar and it's sunny enough for long enough, the electric meter runs backwards and you're putting money back into the utility, and then at night you're using energy and maybe it balances out to zero, or maybe you get a check back from PNM or whatever. And what I've heard through the grapevine is that the privately owned utility isn't really crazy about that
right.
idea in the long run. What about a public utility?
It's a great question. And this really highlights the difference. And it applies not just to solar, but to energy efficiency or the adoption of energy management techniques or voluntary, what they call direct load control, where, you know, you can help, you can make a little money by cutting down your consumption of electricity. It applies to all of those things at the distributed end. When I was at Austin Energy, I was the vice president of distributed energy services. I managed all those programs. Electric vehicles, solar, energy efficiency, load control. I had about 100,000 thermostats in homes that I could switch on and off and pay my customers when I switched it off so they could get paid for not using energy so that we wouldn't have to run expensive power plants. But the difference in the two organizations between an investor-owned utility and a municipal utility and how they face that is pretty dramatic. Remember, when that utility built that big power plant, that coal plant or that nuclear power plant, they were counting on selling a bunch of electricity to pay for that. So if some customer takes matters into their own hands to become more efficient or put their solar system on their roof, the utility frowns because they're getting sales stolen from their financial plans. And as you're exactly right, unfortunately, there are a lot of utilities around this country that are fighting what's starting to become an exciting dawn of a new solar era.
Right.
And more efficient buildings, green buildings, and all those things. Municipal utilities don't have that motivation. They're able to make the smaller investments. They don't usually get tied into the big nuclear power plant and the coal power plant investments. And a municipal for Santa Fe could do that as well. They could avoid all that. They could say, we don't want to buy that. They could use natural gas, which is efficient, comes online quick if you want, you know, and more wind and more solar. There are different scenarios have been run that allow the utility to get substantially more renewables faster. And the good thing about most of those technologies is that you can buy them in small bite-sized chunks. So you don't end up, like I was describing, buying this big power plant and then counting on making the sales. For a municipal utility, a reduction in the demand for a new power plant is savings on the bonds that the city has to issue. When I was at Austin Energy, I was building the biggest power plant that the utility had ever seen. I was building a power plant bigger than one of your coal plants out of energy efficiency. 800 megawatts, a coal plant's worth of energy efficiency reduction. I built it cheaper than you could build a coal plant. I built it in right-sized chunks. I spread it all over the city. And I saved, my division saved so much money that when it came to things like smart grid meters, we bought those for cash. When we did need a power plant, we bought it for cash because we saved so much money.
So basically, the bottom line is that in a municipal utility, energy efficiency is desirable, and in a privately owned utility, it really isn't, because the more energy you sell, the more money you make.
And the plant, exactly right. The plans our utilities make reflect that. You know, municipal utilities are building tens of percent of renewable energy, and private investor-owned utilities are building in the 1s and 2%.
Carl Robigo is former vice president of Austin Energy, a municipal utility. He's a nationally recognized utility expert, and he will be leading a public education forum tomorrow, Wednesday, the 18th of September, called Should We Own the Power Company? It's from 5:30 to 7 at the Scottish Rite Temple here in Santa Fe, sponsored by New Energy Economy, the Sierra Club Rio Grande chapter, and the League of Women Voters. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.